Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 103, Interview with Elise Benin. Elise is the founder of Marketing Mentor, and she's an author, business coach, and speaker who helps creative professionals grow in the business side of their business. In this episode, we talk about the common themes creative professionals wrestle with, the importance of choosing a niche and focusing your business, how case studies can help you stand out, and what the one book every human should read. Show notes for this episode are available at gwtw.co/103. Are you passionate and motivated to make the world a better place and wonder how you're going to market your work? Chris Martin Studios is a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Head to chrismartinstudios.com to see the latest goods produced for people just like yourself. And while you're there, sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. It's a great way to stay connected with Chris Martin Studios and meet awesome people changing the world. All right, you ready for this interview with Elise? Take it away, interviewer Chris. Elise, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
So my name is Elise Benin, and my company is called Marketing Mentor. That's marketing-mentor.com. And I specialize in working exclusively with creative professionals, copywriters, designers, photographers, illustrators, marketers, consultants. Mm-hmm. And I work with them on the business side of their business as a coach, as a mentor, as an advisor, as a nag sometimes. And so we work on pricing and marketing and who is your target market and how are you going to reach them and how are you going to stay in touch with them until they need you and all sorts of questions like that. Usually things that creative professionals hate, actually, and therefore don't do. And I try to help each person find their own comfort level and set of marketing tools or suite of marketing tools that feels right for them and that connects the dots with their target market. Hmm.
I love how you talk about the suite of marketing tools because you yourself utilize just about everything, whether it's Twitter, whether it's newsletters, podcasts, speaking engagements. How do you do it all, Elise?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say that I use everything. It may seem that way, but there are lots of marketing tools I am not using, and that is very intentional. And I would say the strategy that I implement for myself, and I do have to practice what I preach, although this isn't necessarily what I advise to all my clients. It really depends on what your goals are. But for myself, I, for the last 25 years, have been using what is now called a thought leadership strategy or a content marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And basically that means that I create content and then I use as many of the delivery methods that make sense and that work well together and that my clients are on so that they receive the ideas and the thought leadership. And so, yes, that does include email marketing, which is the number one best marketing tool, in my opinion, as well as podcasting. Yes, I do actually host two podcasts, one for myself, the Marketing Mentor podcast, and I also host the How Design Live podcast. And that is very helpful these days because people do, as I'm sure you've noticed, seem to want to listen and learn by listening. Mm-hmm. So I keep doing that. People keep listening and that audience keeps growing. But I also do some social media. It wavers how much I do and what kind of help I have to do it because I don't do it myself. I have someone else do it. But I do think that it's important to be out there and connecting with and visible to my people, and that's often where they are. And LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook as a kind of third, those are the platforms that I use.
Okay. So when you are talking about creating content, I remember reading something a while ago about this concept of micro content, where you create bigger pieces of content and then piece them out into smaller consumable bites. Is that kind of what you do as well, or do you have more a different strategy when you create content?
I don't think I do micro content or use that strategy, and if I do, it's certainly not conscious. But I do like the idea, and therefore use it, of recycling and repurposing content. So it's not like I write a big piece and then chop it up into small pieces, but I start with an idea, and then I try to come up with all the different possible ways to disseminate that idea. And some are micro and some are macro, I would say. And again, it's just all different media. So a podcast, for example, I'll derive the transcript from the podcast and then turn that transcript into either a product that I sell in my store or a piece of a product or a blog post or a series of blog posts or an article that I submit to a publication or all of the above with a slightly different angle or emphasis each time.
I love that. So when did you know you wanted to help creative professionals?
I don't think it happened that way for me. I think it was the reverse, in fact, that I started looking for people I could help, and it was the creative professionals who responded most positively to what I had to say and the way that I was saying it. And so it was a very gradual narrowing into my target market over the course of, I would say, 10 years. And sometimes I think about the people I don't talk about anymore or market to, which include exterminators. And there was one guy who came looking for marketing help who had one of those porta potty companies. I couldn't say yes to that one, but you know, dentists and all different other types of businesses that I have worked with and have helped, but it was little by little, kind of consistently, the creative professionals who seemed to receive my message best. In fact, I'm just remembering a talk I gave at an HVAC conference that was one of the biggest mistakes I made, because clearly they were not hearing me and responsive, you know, to my message and the way that I communicated it. So I, you know, never did that again.
So what was it about your message that really resonated with creative professionals, you think?
I think I understand some of the challenges that people face. And for example, this idea of, you know, hating marketing or hating the business side or believing that they can't do it or don't know how or somehow constitutionally unable to learn what are essentially basic skills, that some of which require simple math and simple conversations with people who might at some point in the future be able to work with you. And so I think there's something about my, David Baker actually once called me the Mother Teresa of creative professionals or marketing consultants for creative professionals. So that may have something to do with it. I'm a nag in a way, but I do it in a very gentle way, and I think it seems to resonate with creatives. I don't really know why. That's my theory.
Well, I think from my perspective and the ways that you've helped me and the ways that you've helped the classes that I've taught is that you take something that can be, I think, overwhelming to creative professionals, this idea of the business world, marketing, advertising, and you make it accessible and you're very friendly. So I think that has a component of it as well. And I think you understand creativity.
So that's interesting. And I would agree with the first idea, because I do very consciously try to simplify some of what could be perceived as very complicated into its essence, if I possibly can, and use everyday language to talk about it. And I use everyday language because I didn't learn the jargon. I never learned. I didn't go to marketing school. I don't have an MBA. And, you know, sometimes that's a problem. But for this market, it seems not to be. It seems to work to my advantage. So I definitely do, I think, try to simplify it. And people respond to that. And to the idea that I understand creativity, I'm not so sure about that. It may seem that way, and maybe I do without really knowing it, but I just, I think I do sometimes have to credit my mother also with the part that is unconscious for me, because she is very creative and always was, and somehow I do feel like ultimately I'm just helping my mother.
How so?
Because she, like all of my clients, has trouble with the business side of her creative business, which she continues to do at the age of, I think she's almost 79. And I just get it. I don't know. I was surrounded by it. I was swimming in it from very early on. And I learned how to handle it.
So with help comes drama. How do you not take on the drama of others? Because creative professionals can be a little bit dramatic at times.
That's for sure. A lot of people. I would say sometimes are drama queens and or have a tantrum from time to time. I do see that. But my job is to balance that, in my opinion. When people come to me for help because they're in a panic, you know, having what I sometimes call a marketing emergency, I automatically, naturally just respond with calm and thinking rather than fantasizing or imagining things, and just try to bring that logical perspective to the table. And some people are open to it and looking for it, and other people just want to have their tantrum, and then I can't really help.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you approach things from a logical standpoint, because that, I think, with most drama, especially for myself, you know, it comes to the fact that I'm not really thinking logically, I'm thinking emotionally.
Right.
So when you're describing marketing emergencies, what are some of the common elements that creative professionals usually find in their marketing emergencies?
One thing that I think is very common, and this is not just for creative professionals, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is the idea that you have a lot at stake in any one situation or with any one prospect or project, that everything depends on it. And if you make a mistake, or if you mess up, or if something bad happens, it's going to be the end of the world. And I think that if one can see that, yes, of course you need clients, we all need clients, but you don't need any one particular client to say yes to you, to love you, to give you the next job. You just need to know how to be resourceful and go looking for the kind of clients that you want. And so I often see the problem as not understanding that fundamental, I would call it autonomy, actually, that we can each develop and cultivate in ourselves. But until you do that, you're going to think, I need that one. I have to do everything I possibly can, devalue myself, discount my services, etc., in order to hold on to that client or that project. And that puts us in a very needy and desperate, and I think sometimes dangerous position.
I think one of the hardest challenges that I personally had is really identifying that ideal client, because I think it can be scary to say, this is the type of person that I want to work with, because you start trimming away what in a lot of creatives' minds, in my mind, is possibility. And sometimes possibility is just in terms of endless possibilities.
Exactly. That is the problem. And in fact, I drafted a blog post this morning on the topic of focus, because everywhere I turn, people seem to be talking about the importance of focus if you want to succeed. In fact, there was a documentary on in the other room the other night, and it was the Warren Buffett, like the life of Warren Buffett. And he emphasized the fact that focus is the key to his success. And so I really think that creative people in particular, but in general in our culture, we have way too many options to choose from. And that thing they call what, FOMO, fear of missing out, and an inability to say no or yes, reject opportunities and possibilities and limit yourself to something, to a market, to an industry, to a service, to an idea. I don't care what you focus on, but you can't be all over the place and succeed. I just don't see that.
So what questions do you usually ask to help bring that focus out and to bring out that niche or that industry or that customer type?
Well, I don't know if it's so much about the questions, but I'll try to answer that question. Mm-hmm. I think that what I try to do with my clients is listen to the things that they know that they don't know they know. And, you know, sometimes it's about what they're interested in, what they're enthusiastic about. Often it's about where their experience and their history is, because that you can build on as a foundation of expertise and legitimately say, I know about this, and clients need you to know about things, their things. And I also think you have to think about who you know, what connections you already have, so that you can shorten the amount of time it takes to get someone's attention. And then the other piece is access. Where do you have access? Where can you get access to people who could potentially be your ideal clients? And by access, I mean, is there a trade show you can attend where you can network with them in person? Or is there a trade association that you can become a member of that has an online forum where their members go looking for help and resources where you could also be and learn about and then eventually help those people? That would give you access to a market. So focus, when I try to help people focus, it's usually about, I guess this is an answer to your question, who do you know, how can you get access, and what do you know that you could use all of those things together in an integrated way that could eventually gradually become your niche. And I say it that way because it does take a long time. As I mentioned, it took me 10 years to figure out that it was creative professionals. And then since then, I've just narrowed more and more because I get better at helping the people I know how to help. And then it wouldn't be fair. In fact, this morning, I talked to a guy. I did my free consultation, which I offer to anyone who wants to take advantage of it. And he found me on Google, and I didn't really understand his business. It was an e-commerce business that had to do with selling baby stuff to moms. And I was like, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I don't know about that. I know about this. And I think he was grateful actually that I didn't try to sell him something. But I can only be honest and say that's not where my competence lies. And therefore, that's not what I'm confident about. So, you know, good luck to you. And I trust that there are enough clients and prospects and creative professionals out there for me to keep building my business.
I love this conversation centered around focus and trimming things away, because it provides insight into your latest product, which is a case study bundle. Because I think in order to really write effective case studies, I think focus, what you're describing, is essential. So why did you end up writing or creating a product on case studies, and what goes into an effective case study?
In my online store, I try to create and then sell products, downloads, basically, virtual products or intangible products that aren't out there, that no one else has, but that I see a need for. And so, as you may know, I have proposal bundles and marketing plans and a new series called Excellent Examples of Different Types of Marketing Tools, because I really think that creative people need models of, and need to see other people doing well what they're trying to do. So that's kind of the core of what I sell in my store. And so case studies, actually, I had been thinking about for a while and collecting examples of. And in the case study bundle, by the way, there are, I think, 14 examples of different types of case studies. So because you can do it, many different ways. As the market changes and as there become more and more creative professionals who you are competing against, you have to be able to set yourself apart from everyone who says, I do X. Everyone who, you know, because in your elevator pitch, it's hard to really convey what is different about you. You have to try, but it's very difficult, you know, in a 10-word sentence how to convey what's different about you. And as I was working with clients and they were putting their portfolios up on their websites, I just thought the clients have no idea what goes into this work. They can't judge mediocre creative from amazing, excellent creative. And so there needs to be a way for you, each of us, to convey and communicate at exactly the right moment when someone is ready and open to hear it, of course, what it is that sets you apart. And so to me, the case study is the perfect marketing tool for that. And I'm actually working on an article right now for How Magazine about case studies as the replacement for your portfolio, because I think that more than anything, your clients need to understand how you think about their problem and how you've solved it for people just like them. And that's why focus, just bringing it back to your question, the idea of focus is so important when it comes to case studies, because it basically allows you, the case study allows you to support the positioning that this is your focus. If you have developed one or more case studies for a particular market, then clearly that is your focus.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And what it just, it encourages me, and I hope it encourages others to really fight to focus and fight through the endless possibilities so that they can then write these case studies.
Tell me more about the fighting, if you don't mind me asking you a question, because I think that's really interesting. And I'm curious what you're fighting against. You said the endless possibilities.
For me personally, I spent a lot of time feeling like I could do everything. So when I started my business, it's like, oh, I'm going to do web design and development, graphic design, video, photography, do more of a generalist approach. And for anybody and anything that could come along. And I fought, you know, trimming things away and saying no to things that I didn't even actually like doing. I just had a reputation for them over time because I was doing everything. And over the summer, I actually trimmed everything away except video production, just saying, I want to be known for this. And so it was a fight to actually get to that point of saying, I'm not going to do all those other things. I'm going to turn down those other things now and focus on what fuels me and what I think I'm best at.
And I think that it is a fight, but it is also a risk, and that must be acknowledged. And that's why it has to be undertaken very deliberately and gradually, that you don't on any given day, okay, I made my decision, I know my niche, I'm revamping my whole website to reflect that. I don't think that's a good idea. I think you have to start with, all right, here's a niche I'm thinking about exploring. I think it's viable. I think there's some potential here. Let me test it. Mm-hmm. And that does mean, you know, going out and talking to the actual people. And I think that's actually something creatives wrestle with a lot. This difference between what you have to do to interact with the market and get the information you need from real people, which is what a lot of people seem to resist, and sacrifice for the easy thing, which is working on your website or anything behind the scenes that doesn't get you interacting with anyone. You're laughing, so I guess you relate to that.
I relate to that very much because it's very easy to update your website, make a reel, you know, do all of the things except actually talk to people.
Right. And so I keep trying to figure out, why is that so, what, difficult, challenging, scary? What is it?
Yeah. You know, I think it comes down to, I think avoiding talking to people means that you don't have to potentially have your dreams dashed or have to change or evolve your thinking about what you're doing. I don't know.
That's interesting.
I think for the longest time, I didn't want to make the decision because then, you know, it could still be a dream in my head. I didn't have to test it or challenge it. Whereas it got to a point where I needed to test and challenge it, because when you start talking to people, it changes how you communicate and how you think about what you're doing.
For sure. Which, and it has to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. So the idea that, all right, you've got it in your head, you know who you are, you know what you do, you even know how to talk about it, but then you start talking to people, real people about it, and they don't understand a thing you're saying. And so you have to adjust your language and sometimes simplify it and even sometimes, I think, hide or omit some aspects that are the most important to you because they're totally irrelevant to the people you're working with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It is. And I think that even just finding people to talk to, even if it's not in your market, but people like yourselves, is so crucial to creative professionals because, you know, you can't create in a vacuum. I think that if you ever need another way to describe yourself, I think you could be described as the creative professional whisperer.
Well, I know that accountability is one of the main things people seem to come to me for, because it is true that working in isolation, which more and more people do, work remotely or virtually or work at home, and it can be very lonely, and you don't know if what you're doing is the right thing. And so it definitely does seem to help. And because I talk to so many people every day, I do have a bit of a finger on the pulse of what seems to be happening out there. And that's what I share.
That's awesome. So, Elise, what are you curious about?
So many things, actually. I mean, even some of the questions that have come up so far in our conversation, what is it that people seem to be so afraid of? And why do we hold ourselves back when there's so much more and better, I think, that we could be doing? I see that a lot. People are very complacent and take what comes along. Oh, by the way, they call that getting word of mouth, and they think it's a good thing, and they feel lucky to get word of mouth until, of course, it stops, and then you're totally unlucky. So, you know, that's one of the challenges that I work against also with people, which is you do not have to rely on word of mouth if you put a really simple marketing plan in place and just keep the machine running on an ongoing basis.
So what keeps you motivated and moving forward each day? Is it just talking to people and hearing them, or do you have something internally that guides you and motivates you?
I just love what I do, I have to say, and every day is different. And I do love talking to people and seeing the patterns that come up with all the different people that I talk to, but also then, maybe this is creativity, because I have to figure out a different way to express what is essentially the same idea so that each different person will hear it if they're ready to, and or see what they're doing. So it's this constant attempt to reframe or rethink or reconfigure some of the ideas and understand them better. So I don't know if that's what motivates me, but that's what I do and I love it.
That's awesome.
It is kind of cool.
What is one book or resource every creative professional should read?
Well, I can only tell you that my favorite book these days is called The Most Human Human by Brian Christian. And it's all about the difference between what makes a person human and what makes a machine appear to be human. And I don't know if every designer or creative professional needs to read it, but I think every human being needs to read it, because it really, it just gives a very interesting perspective, especially as AI, you know, it begins to take over.
Well, it's fascinating too, because sometimes I personally fight that struggle of how much of my humanity do I put out there, and how much if it is this curated, you know, look at who I am.
So that's making me think about the difference between what it means to be real and honest, which is what I would call one's humanity, and authentic, in quotation marks, which seems like this kind of fake realness that everyone seems to think is so important these days. I don't know. I heard, maybe it was a podcast, something recently where they were talking about the difference between those words, and it kind of rang true for me. So, you know, when people talk about being personal, really, you know, in their marketing, in their newsletter, how much do you reveal? How much do you show? How much do you tell? I think those are important questions. And certainly people more and more crave something spontaneous and real, because there is so much fake or fake authentic or branding even. And so I think that's why networking in person can be so effective, is because you don't have to be perfect at it, but it is one of the most real things you could do to meet real people.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, final question for you, Elise. What are you excited about today?
Today, what am I excited about today? It's just a beautiful day here in Savannah. And I'm going to take my dog for a walk later. And there's a little pond at the end of the block where I always see egrets and wood storks. And so just, you know, the opportunity to be quiet, actually, and see nature. That's what I'm excited about.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Elise, for just sharing about what you do and who you are as a person. I always feel so energized after a conversation with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm happy to speak with you also and just kind of follow what you are doing and the way you are translating what you learn and sharing it with other people. I think that's really helpful.
Awesome. Well, thank you. That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. My thanks to Elise for doing all that she does to improve the lives and businesses of creative professionals all around the world. And thank you for taking the time to listen to Getting Work to Work. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. While you're at it, head to gwtw.co where you can sign up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter, and find the various social media links to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You'll even find a link to my Patreon page where you can support my work here at Getting Work to Work, as well as future documentary projects and online courses. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.